Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today.
So by 1700s, they had deteriorated to like horrific conditions.
No way.
And you're still talking about hospitals?
We just don't understand each other. The ER was insane. Like somebody was wheeled in with a knife in their head.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And you're seeing this as a sophomore?
Yeah.
The building industry has long been reluctant to change. When things are going well, developers and builders have had no incentive to rock the boat. But now, post-recession, a shift in society and culture has ushered in a tidal wave of change in the industry, and there's no going back. Welcome to Spaces, where we explore and analyze how the building industry is evolving, from design and construction to management and economics. Join hosts Jason, Ali, and Demetrius as they discuss the evolution of your spaces.
Hello! My name is Demetrius, here with Jason, and unfortunately this week, no Ali. She's out traveling, so the show must go on, and that show is Spaces. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. We're back today. Like I mentioned, Jason and I are going to carry the load today and try and pick up the slack. So, Jason, you better bring it. So
I'll do what I can.
Keep everybody entertained. So today's topic, we're going to discuss hospitals, which I am super amped about. I was nerding out in preparation for this. I don't think I ever told you I went to a medical magnet high school, and
that type of thing exists.
Yeah. So shout out to King Drew. Anybody from high school that's listening, it's a school in LA. So it was a prep school with the hopes of you going into the medical profession.
Like a solid 4 years
for high school. Yeah.
Of high school prepping you to go to med school.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was cool because we actually got to do hospital rotations, and
that's impressive.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they would even do something like that.
Yeah. And it was crazy. Cause, some of my rotations I did, like a daycare and then an adult daycare. So you can kind of pick and choose which one you wanted to do.
Wow.
And then I did the ER, which was insane.
Wait, how old were you when you started going through some of this though? I mean, like not as a freshman, you weren't doing these tours as a freshman, right? Do it later on.
I transferred into the school in my 10th grade year, so I wasn't I don't know what they did in 9th grade. I'm not quite sure.
Interesting.
But yeah, so you start doing the rotations, and the ER was insane. Like somebody was wheeled in with a knife in their head.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And you're seeing this as a sophomore?
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
I can't even drive, and I'm seeing guys stabbed in the
head.
Yeah.
They found a body, and they brought him into the ER, and they were trying to revive him. It was crazy, but I saw an actual surgery. I was in the room observing a surgery. We're just standing in the corner, like trying not to touch anything.
Trying not to faint.
Yeah. You're, like, watching. No, literally.
Literally, because I would imagine at that age, seeing everything that you're seeing, people would probably pass out.
Oh, yeah. Some people had to leave the room because they were using
throw up or anything.
Exactly.
Using like a saw and stuff like that.
They were using a laser at the time to do the incisions, and... yeah, it was...
That's intense.
The smell was...
Oh, the smell is what gets people. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if you didn't have breakfast that morning, or if you had too much breakfast that morning, it was uncomfortable.
So was that what you were planning to do, was go to med school? Like, well, why...
It was a really good school
because
in the area.
You took a left turn then, brother, and went freaking totally towards architecture. I mean, like, was it the smell or what happened, you know?
No, it was partly because it was a good school and it was like semi-college prep. And it was a consideration. I probably easily could have gone that route. It's very interesting. Like, I nerded out prepping for this because I've, you know, seen some of this behind-the-scenes stuff. And I considered it, but architecture was my passion. And I just kept going that route after I finished school. I was like, I just got to go back and focus on architecture.
It's crazy because my sister-in-law's, and I'm going to butcher this, she's a PA. Physician's assistant.
Oh, yeah.
And so when she was going to school, and you know, I mean, clearly it's not 6-8 years or, you know, whatever it takes to get through that to med school. But she was telling me, you know, she's like helping in surgeries and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's some serious BS. I'm like, if I'm knocked out on the table, I don't want somebody freaking practicing on me. You know what I mean? I don't care how good they think their future is or not. You know what I mean? Like, I am not paying good money because I have good insurance for that to happen. You know what I mean? But it's like, that's crazy. And she was telling me like all the stuff she's seen and everything, and she loves it.
And it's surprising throughout the history of hospitals. It's there's been a lot of that combination of education with the
really
medical
I've never actual heard of
that. You know treatment. So well, there's some big hospitals that throughout history that have been linked directly to a college.
College, I get, but high school, like that's trippy. Yeah. You know,
well, you weren't allowed to really do anything.
No, you're but just, even being in there, I mean, like I never had heard of that. I never would have crossed my mind. Very cool.
Good for you. Yeah. We kind of already started, but how was your weekend?
Last couple of weeks, you know, honestly, it's kind of blended together. I'm pretty sure it was full of the normal stuff, normal family duties and, you know, work stuff and youth sports. But I think the highlight slash low light, if you will, my wife and I, you know, we try to do date nights at least, you know, once a month. I mean, that's how sad it gets, right? Where you legitimately like get a babysitter and try to just, you know, steal some hours on your own and at a evening with normal people. And so she set this one up, and it was actually, she takes, my wife's very active. She owns a dance studio. And she does a bar method class. I take that back. It's not bar method. It's pure bar.
Okay.
And also does some cycling stuff, right? And then I just usually go to the gym. So she, I don't know, she emailed me, called me, or texted me a couple of weeks ago and says, hey, this Friday night or whatever yesterday was, whatever the date was, I think it was the 23rd.
Yeah.
She goes, we're doing date night at the bar. And I'm like, what? Like, she doesn't drink. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we're not going to a bar. She's like, no, you idiot. You know what I mean? Like the bar, like her bar class, pure bar class. I'm like, this is not going to be good. Yeah. You know, I'm like, all right. I mean, like, why not? You know, like, and at their studio, HBP Dance Extreme, they do a class that's called Strength and Stretch. Okay. And when I first met her, long time ago and started dating her seriously, like she took me into that class, and our partner Huggy, he like basically annihilated me. I mean, I was dying, right? So I've been an athlete my whole life, you know, hockey, soccer, everything like that, and it just worked me well. Then we go to last night, and I'm out of the, I think there was 10 couples, so, and each, you know, each gal, and so then these are the hardcore gals that actually, like, you know, do really well, and they're you know, all in good shape. The dudes were mixed bag. There was a guy next to me that was like a CrossFitter, which I do not like CrossFitters, okay? because they think they're athletes. And I'm like, no. Like I have a lot of respect for what you're doing, but you're not an athlete, you know? But anyway, so he was next. Oh, I hope so. And he had his tights on and everything. Like, it was prototypical. The only thing he needed was some extra chalk, you know what I'm saying? Oh, my God. And you could just smell the protein powder. And so anyway, so he was next to me and a couple other guys that weren't in great shape, but it was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was brutal. And the teacher was super cool. This is, I think it's Pure Bar in Tustin off of 17th Street here in Southern California. And she's like, push me. She's like, you know, like she goes, you got to push your hips forward.
Hmm.
I'm like, my hips don't go forward. Like, I don't look at like every sport you've ever played. If you think about it, it's like you're in a, like your hips point back.
Yeah.
Out. They go back. And if you're going to deadlift, you're going to squat, you're going to do whatever, you put your hips back so you can get proper alignment for your back. I'm like, my hips are not made to go forward.
Yeah.
Like, that is not going to happen. Yeah. And there was like multiple different things where my wife's just dying because she comes over and she's like, hey, you do that? I'm like, that's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Quit pushing me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the funny part was, then they get these stupid little neoprene dumbbells dumbbells. You know what I'm talking about, right? The 2-pounders, 3-pounders. Yeah, so you got like these pink things, these blue things, and like the black ones. The black ones are the big ones, are 5-pounders. I'm just like, oh, this is going to be, this is nothing, right? Why had, it was a back and shoulder day for me that morning, right? Okay. So at 4:30 to roughly 5:30 in the morning, I was doing a pretty heavy workout, really happy. I hit some personal records, and we get in there. Everything's like extending. You get, people can't see this, right? But you're extending your arms all the way out and doing these shoulders and back exercises with 5-pound dumbbells. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Because my muscles are just exhausted. Because I'm like, I'm only 12 hours past where I just exhausted them, and they're just screaming at me. But then you're looking at yourself in the mirror with all these other girls going, I can't stop.
With the little 5-pounds.
I can't stop with the 5, like sweating and just wanting to cry. And so anyway, so that plus all the crazy like stretching stuff they make you do, which I'm actually pretty limber as a dude. I'm semi bendy.
Okay.
But because, you know, I played goalie forever in hockey, but it just, I mean, it's a humbling experience. My wife's a badass. Yeah. My wife's a straight badass. I mean, she's, I think my wife's hot, which is great, right? But she's in great shape, and she's just laughing at me. Oh, I mean, man. I think it was partly like, let's go have a good time. I had a good time with it. Yeah. You know? And I think everybody else had a good time because I was making everybody laugh, which probably also made it harder. But we had a good time, and she had a good time, and then I got to go eat dessert at least after, so it kind of made it worth it. So it was good, though. It was good. What about you?
That's funny. Well, first, did you get your cinnamon roll?
Hell yeah. I went this morning. So this morning we went down and met my dad for a walk around Balboa, hit up Blue Chair. So I was so pumped, man, because I gave the gal a rip. I'm like, you don't get to close for 3 weeks. Yeah. Like that is not like 1 week is cool. Like everybody needs a week vacation, not 3 weeks. That's like don't do so it. She's funny. Laughing at me.
Yeah. So for my last couple of weeks have been interesting, you know, getting this, my business now up and running.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, doing all the legal and tax stuff, it's been a pain, but exciting because, you know, it's a complete change of pace from what I'm usually doing, sitting behind a desk. And it's taken these last, 3 weeks or so to recondition my mind. So anybody out there that's going to be starting a business, be prepared. It takes a while to get your mind to basically restructure and understand that you don't have to sit at your desk for 8 straight hours. And it
takes more discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
It almost takes more discipline.
It does, but the cool thing about it is that you don't have to do something unless you are in that mindset to do it. Mm-hmm. So when I'm not feeling as creative, you know what? I'm not going to design. I'm going to go ahead and start filling out these forms and whatnot, and vice versa.
Right on.
I love that part about it. And then I got to, you know, connect with a lot of people that are doing a similar thing as me, old coworkers and people I've done work with before. And it's a really exciting time. There's a lot of stuff going on kind of organically that I think is going to change not only the architecture profession, but the workforce in general. We hinted at people working from home increasing. I think entrepreneurship is going to start to increase. And it's going to be a domino effect. I think things are going to be changing very rapidly, fairly soon. So it's an exciting time. I got to speak to some people that kind of reaffirmed what we're doing here. You know, one of the things that in one of my conversations I really realized is that in the building industry, we just don't understand each other, from a contractor to architect to mechanical, electrical designer. Nobody understands each other. So we all blame each other and point the fingers at each other. And we think everybody else's job is so easy, and it's not. Nobody's job is easy, and we have to, you know, be more compassionate about each other and understand. I'm freaking out because my boss is yelling at me. You're yelling at me. I know someone's yelling at you.
Yeah.
We're all just trying to get our job done.
Yep.
And to, you know, be more compassionate and understanding. Yeah, that was a mistake. Let's figure out how to correct it. Let's not point fingers at each other. You know, let's work together. Because we're all working on a project together, and we are all trying to get to a common goal. So,
I think it's a really good point. And I think you guys get blamed for a lot. And I think what frustrates me, and I don't know if we're talking commercial or residential side. I feel like it's more commercial.
But I think it's everywhere.
Okay. I definitely see it on the commercial side a lot. And it's just like, well, that's what the architect drew. And you just want to, like, I've heard that multiple times from different trades when we're in meetings and things of that nature. And I just want to spit on the back of my hand and slap them. Because it's like, aren't you supposed to be the expert in your field? And if it doesn't look like it's right, you're just going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, which might blend into something else I want to talk about later. Yeah. But they don't tend to take responsibility for those things or make suggestions. I think it's a broken process. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at how... the way the process works, if you're an affluent trade and you know what you're doing and you bring up these questions about spec and everything else and start saying, well, they don't really want that, they want this, this, and this, you like won't get jobs.
Yeah.
Because you're bid too high. Mm-hmm. Whereas the rest of them are like, well, you guys should have put that into your scope, mm-hmm. or you should have drawn it that way or whatever. So here's a change order.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the way around, and we're not heavily involved in commercial because I see it a lot on commercial. On residential, I feel like there's a little, I'm not going to say it's fluid, but there's a little bit better like cross communication. And you're looking at a smaller building too, right? Yeah. So when you're getting a commercial, it's like multi millions of dollars, yeah. as opposed to a residential project, even though it's per plan, each home is only X amount and usually get through it in the first three models anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the whole process is broken. It really is.
Yeah. And I think, and one of the things that came up was 2008 recession. A ton of people left the field. So you got a lot of people, or the industry. So you got a lot of people that aren't really equipped with that experience.
Young crop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inexperienced young crop.
And then the last thing I'll say on this before we can jump into this, but as far as fees, I think we all need to get comfortable with the fact that, you know, your fee is your fee. It's for a reason, to cover that service. And you have to provide quality service. So we all have to get used to speaking honestly to each other, listening to each other honestly, to accept that, you know, someone's fee is there for a reason, and maybe not be so quick to push back on it and not be so quick to just accept being pushed back on, because it's for a reason. A lot of companies end up going out of business because of this scope creep and fees not covering their work. But Let's kind of jump off of that, because I know we could go all day on that. But all of this has put into perspective how much I appreciate the guys that work on hospitals. It is a bear of a project. It's probably one of the most complex project types to work on. There's tons of parts, tons of things to consider. So we'll jump into that now. And one of the first, or the original facility for a hospital, was considered a temple to the healing gods.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so, but it wasn't the hospital that you would think of. So in this temple for the healing gods, they did prayers, sacrifices. This is all your treatment.
There you go.
Prayers, sacrifices, and dream interpretations. And that all played a role in their healing process. But they also did stitch wounds, set broken bones, and used opiates for pain.
For pain, yeah. Well, I can imagine if somebody was trying to interpret my dreams, that probably wouldn't help them.
Yeah.
That might more so hurt them in a lot of different ways. But
yeah. So they believe that the earliest actual hospital, built hospital, was in Sri Lanka. And they found these rooms were 13 by 13, which is pretty close to what these hospitals are today, which is crazy that the same, you know, those same
footprint.
Yeah. The same exists today. But the Greeks were kind of the originators of the concept of rational medicine that closely translates to what we have today. Although the Romans were one of the first ones that introduced the word hospital, or a close translation to hospital. Their words were, in Latin, hospice, or hospitium. And that translated to actually entertain, which I found surprising. It's like,
Romans are known for a lot of that type of stuff,
right? Yeah, that's true. The Roman military hospitals were one of the first healthcare facilities that kind of started the structure that kind of blended into what we have today. But it was in a sort of a courtyard footprint. So if you think, you know, you got your square courtyard and these long rectangular rooms around that courtyard, And in those rooms, this is what they call the ward. If you've all heard of the word ward,
yep.
It was just that big room for multiple beds. And that was that military kind of format.
Makes sense, yeah.
So you had soldiers and slaves, basically, that were in these places. So it was kind of lower income, sort of, I guess.
Okay.
But
as opposed to separate rooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
But when the Roman Empire turned to Christianity, the church got really involved and basically took over the role of hospitals. So you end up with like St. Mary's Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that today. That's kind of like a heavy influence.
Yeah, for sure.
Of this foundation for a lot of hospitals. So this ward format was kind of dangerous, though, because you got...
Well, you can spread disease like
exactly,
crazy.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So you got all these people in there, and it's just prime for disease to spread. But the first hospital in the Americas was actually in Mexico City in 1524. The first North American hospital was in Quebec, actually. They had 10 beds. In 1672... Another ward was ward format was added, and they had 24 beds. So you can see it started to progressively get more and more beds.
Yeah.
And obviously, the more people you introduce, the worse the conditions can get.
For sure.
So by 1700s, they had deteriorated to like horrific conditions. Some wards had over 100 beds in them. Jeez. And even multiple patients in one bed.
How's that even possible?
I know.
That's what I don't understand.
Yeah. So they were dark, poorly ventilated, obviously unsanitary. And then you come to, our 13 colonies here and Bellevue Hospital in New York, which was built in 1743. It saw a lot of these poor conditions. So an interesting story from Bellevue. There was a doctor named Alexander Anderson. He was one of the first physicians at Bellevue. And he was only a 22-year-old apprentice, and he really wanted to be an engraver, but his parents were like, we want you to do God's work, so you're going to be a doctor. So he ended up continuing on to...
It's a slightly different topic, isn't it?
Yeah, so he ended up just going ahead and pursuing being a doctor, and he took a job at Bellevue in the mid-1700s, where these wards are getting out of control, putting people on top of each other in horrible conditions. And in Bellevue, they were basically just shipping people that had yellow fever. And he didn't really know how to deal with them. It was just a constant flow of these people that were sick with yellow fever. But he basically just bled them and purged them.
Crazy.
So he had incredible kindness and compassion for
them.
Sounds
like it.
Yeah. Well, so that was the thing that stood out about him, is that he was really kind and compassionate, but he knew there was no way, like, yeah, there was nothing they could do. Yeah. So he basically stayed there for several years and several waves of this epidemic. And during his time there, his son died of yellow fever. His wife died of yellow fever. Jeez. His mother, his father, his brother all died of yellow
fever.
Good
heavens, man.
Yeah. And
why are you telling us the story? You make me feel so sad.
So this is I'm just, you know, giving you a background of to appreciate what we have today.
Okay. All right.
But I'll get off of this story. So that was kind of the scene in the mid-1700s. And so then you fast forward a little bit and we start to get some advancement. Have you heard of the Florence Nightingale?
Yeah.
So they basically came up with a new layout for these wards. If you imagine like a long hallway and then these rectangular rooms that kind of pop off of that hallway perpendicularly.
Yep.
And that's all. So they're not kind of touching each other.
Right.
And then
it's kind of like modern day then.
Yeah. So then you have that courtyard space in the middle, so you can get fresh air coming through there, and they're not immediately next to each other.
Hmm.
So that started that kind of design, which was, I cannot say this name for, they have all these random S's in it. Johns Hopkins.
Hopkins.
Yeah.
Johns Hopkins.
Yeah. So that was one of the first hospitals. Okay. I'm all tongue tied that had this layout. And then they took it a step further, and there were a few hospitals that did it, but took it a step further and ended up having multiple floors at this point, because previously they were all, you know, single story. Yep. So that way you ended up condensing space and cutting down the travel time for doctors. The other option to a ward is you pay extra or you donate and you can get a private room. So more and more people started catching wind of this, getting a private room. And by 2006, they ended up passing guidelines. So it was 2006 guidelines for the design and construction of hospitals that stated construction. In new construction, the maximum number of beds per room shall be one unless the functional program demonstrates the necessity of a two-bedroom two-bed arrangement. So at that point, it started to become normal practice to get your own room for the most part. But there is some disadvantage. Some people argue that you have a lack of social interaction, and then the other two are kind of obvious. It's more difficult to get a nurse's attention, and more difficult for them to notice if you fall. But it is, you know, everybody wanted it. You get more privacy, less chance of infection spreading.
Yeah, I would think it's the key for the last part of that.
Yeah. The shift to getting a single per room or one bed per room brings up the question of, is the demand for the private patient room contributing to the increased cost of healthcare?
Well, I think it has to, right? I mean, you lose efficiency.
Yeah. Alternatively, does it actually reduce the cost of healthcare because you're reducing infections and the length of staying time?
Well, I remember, I mean, it's a good question. I remember reading a book, and I thought it was, I think it was called Better by Atul Gawande, and they were talking about...
It's a great book.
It was a great book, and if I remember correctly, really what was like the spread of the disease was not so much people being next to each other. It was the fact that the individual that was working on each person wouldn't like re-sanitize.
Yep.
So you would touch, you know, an individual and then you know, not clean, not sanitize, not disinfect and go touch the next individual. So whatever that one person had, A, you're passing on to person B. Yeah. And it really, I mean, if you think about it now.
And the doctor felt bad or awkward or uncomfortable. You know, putting on gloves or you know, whatever.
They said it was feel like less personal or something like that, right?
They thought it, you know, made the patient uncomfortable, like they didn't trust them.
No, I'm cool. Go ahead and use that. I'd rather not die.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. But I mean, like I was trying to think the last few times we've been in the hospital for, you know, births or like little minor surgeries or whatever. It's always been multiple people in a room.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just a freaking shower curtain, you know, in the middle of it now, because, and that's what I remember, you know, even at, when my son was born, you know, roughly nine and a quarter years ago, he was born at St. Joseph's here in Orange County and had to be moved down to Chalk because he was 6.5 weeks early. And as a baby, they're in the NICU, but, and I realized they're like in little baby growers, incubators, but they're all sitting with the same people. Mm-hmm. So, it kind of answers that same question. As long as they're sanitizing whatever they're doing with each individual, you know, you were fine, you know.
There's a ton to consider when you're designing a hospital, and this is where I get that appreciation from. So, you're considering the beds related to the inpatient functions, outpatient related functions, the actual alignment of your design to the services to be done. So you have the diagnostics and treatment functions, admin functions, service functions for food and supplies, research and teaching, and then you have to keep it efficient and cost effective.
Right.
And then on top of that, you have flexibility and expandability concerns. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but some of the larger hospitals have this thing called interstitial space.
Sounds like a big word that I wouldn't know.
So the interstitial space is basically, I'll put up an image of this as well. So if you cut through a building, you'll see, let's say you have like a large 14-foot floor to ceiling.
Okay.
But you have a supported lower ceiling.
Drop.
At like, I don't know, 9 feet or whatever.
Okay.
So then you have this small space above that supported, drop ceiling. That's that interstitial space.
Huh. Okay.
So what happens there is they can store equipment.
Yep.
not only just like your mechanical equipment and stuff, but actual scanners and, okay, you know, all those
more
different
portable
things.
Type stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you can move them around and drop it down, drop cables and whatever you need into different spaces and adjust it. So that's just like one concept of the flexibility and expandability. And then you want it to make a therapeutic environment. Then you consider
beige.
Yeah.
Tan beige.
Yeah.
You know, soothing.
Woods, tans, beige. And then you're looking at the accessibility and controlled circulation, obviously sanitary. And then this one kind of jumped out to me, but it makes sense, is regional demographics.
What do you mean by regional demographics, though?
So that's having an understanding of the people in the region and whether that population is growing or shrinking, so that you know how much that hospital needs to be able to sustain.
So really, it's kind of like the same idea as when residential home buildings going through a building process and what schools and stuff like that, like what the serviceability for that area is going to be. It's the same idea.
Yeah. And then as far as the codes, hospitals, I was kind of shocked to see this. They're among the most regulated of all building types. But the federal facilities that are on federal property, they don't have to adhere to like the normal state and local codes, but they follow federal regulations, which have mostly adopted what's called the Facility Guidelines Institute, FGI, guidelines for design and construction of healthcare facilities.
No shock the government wouldn't carve themselves out something a little bit easier to get things done.
Yeah. So on the construction side, which I know you'll appreciate,
I can't imagine having to deal with all that. I mean, when you look at all the equipment, like you said, the ventilation, the clean rooms.
Yeah.
I mean, so the refrigeration. I mean, just the amount of power you have to get through there. I mean, so many different things. Like it's intense. I think you said intense earlier.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is the building we're in now, our companies are in right now. It had like, I think it's like, I could be butchering this, so please don't take it the wrong way, but like H5 chemical and fire and all these kind of containments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like insulation on insulation, certain thicknesses of walls, like the systems had to be able to pump X amount of cubic, you know, inches per second and all this kind of stuff. And like super detailed, which is horrible because we just tore it out and threw it away because it didn't fit what we needed to do. But I can only imagine how intricate it would have to be in a hospital, having seen what we saw on that side.
Yeah.
And the specs alone, the flow rates, everything else that goes into all those things, because that's the other thing. A lot of the stuff in the hospital is like combustible.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And people don't realize that. So the containment systems that you have to have on top of that are gnarly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot more than beige walls and VCT tile, you know?
So I dabbled in hospital or medical facility design as well, and just the air control, you almost have like airlock systems, like a spaceship.
Well, you have to because when you talk about containing disease and things like that, like if there was like, you know, that was the movie like Outbreak way back when, you know, but legitimately, like all of a sudden you have to be able to isolate and contain things. And the other one that's coming to mind right now is the movie with Nicolas Cage, and it was that gas. It was like sarin gas or something like that. The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock.
It was The Rock.
Yeah.
And you remember that room, like one of those balls like hit the floor and it opened, and it's like they had to seal that door.
Yeah.
And you see that guy just basically melting into nothing, right? But that's legitimate. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you're looking at where you have to have those types of measures in place and those systems in place to make sure if something, God forbid, something did happen, you got to be able to shut it down and hang on to it. You know what I mean? And just isolate it.
And I think that's, you know, when they have those serious outbreaks or concerns of outbreaks like the Ebola kind of went around, there's certain facilities that are equipped to handle something like that.
Correct.
So not all of them have that level.
To that level.
Yeah.
But they have to have, but what did happen if there was an outbreak in that, and I keep saying hotel, I don't know why, but in that hospital, there's at least minimums that they had to do to be able to then shut off that wing or whatever it is until the CDC and everybody else gets there.
Yeah.
And that makes that transport to one of these more robust type environments, right?
Yeah.
But You know, and I mean, and the other thing that goes into it, once it's built, the protocols that those people have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the crazy part, right? Because if you're not on point with what you're supposed to be doing, and you went to the wrong bar method class, right? It could be severe.
Yeah.
So, like, quickly.
Yeah. You know? And the construction site, some of the issues that they ran into are time and budget.
I guarantee you none of those are ever on budget.
So get this.
Never.
So a 2015 hospital construction survey found that only 46% of the responders, I'm surprised it's this high, only 46% of the responders completed their projects on or under budget and or on or ahead of schedule.
That's a BS statistic. There's no way.
You think there's less?
Oh, dude, that's totally cooked. There's no way.
Yeah.
Because for one, they never budget right.
Yeah.
Like, and I was just, and let's go back to what I was saying before with like change orders, right? Because it's all the architect's fault, right? but ultimately, I mean, that's what you're going to run into. Like, you know, coming from the flooring side and the cabinetry side, right? They give you a spec and it just says VCT.
Yeah.
Which VCT? You know, and it's not your guys' fault, right? Because the designer, but it's like there's a dollar a foot VCT, there's 50 cents a foot VCT.
Yeah.
Hell, there's $5 a foot VCT.
Yeah.
Which one do you want? You throw that spec. There's no way it stayed on budget.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. That's a full on lie.
So with that, I got to address this. So a lot of owners don't want you to nail down a specific spec because they need wiggle room.
They're stupid.
So they don't want us to put whatever it is in the drawings because when the inspector comes out, you have to put exactly what's in that contracted document.
Right, have the MSDS and everything.
Yeah, so a lot of them like to have that wiggle room to you know, either provide their own spec
just book, on the fly.
Yeah, or adjust if they start to get over budget in construction and whatever. So
yeah, because they are over budget every time.
So we get blamed a lot for that kind of stuff, which drives me crazy. But
well, it's not your fault, right? Yeah. But ultimately, it's like you want to push for it. And like I'm bidding a project right now. It's not a hospital, but I've got like all these questions going back to them because they need us to help them. And they're like, oh, nobody else has asked that. And I'm like, exactly right. Like that's the exact point that I'm talking about. They just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I do feel bad for the architect because you guys are designers of a different type than like an interior designer, right? You have your ideas as far as aesthetics and viewpoints and those types of things, but not the exact detailed material that should be going. It's like, hey, we want some kind of wood floor. And in your head, you're picturing something, but that range is just way out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It requires a lot of attention and,
trade specificity, you know?
And I mean, we could do that, but nobody, I mean, that's,
no, I agree.
That takes a lot of attention and you're more than likely going to lose money on that.
Oh, I agree. But the thing is, and like it's a change order. So it goes in there and it says that number and the owner may want that. Well, maybe the owner's then saying it was on budget because in my head, I knew I was going to spend an extra 20%.
Yeah.
You know, which is not unheard of, you know? Plus time too, 20% on. Nobody's ever on time. Like those big buildings are not on time.
Yeah. So then another issue is scope creep, and to kind of combat that. So what most of the hospitals are the method of construction is design build, and for those that may not know what design build, that's when you look at go to a company that has everybody. All under one roof. So you have your contractor that's actually going to build it, your architect. And then there's different levels of design build. Some have, you know, your structural, your mechanical, everybody all on staff. Some are the primary contractor. Sure. And they may have just the architect and just the contractor or just the architect, and they handle all the subcontracts. So that's what the concept of design build, and the benefit is that you have basically one person that you turn to the entire length of that job. So you're not contacting each individual person.
A part separately. Is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it efficient, but they're still running into issues with that design build. So another method that people were starting to pick up on is a fast track. Have you worked on a project that was fast track delivery method?
I think it depends on what we're going to identify as fast track.
So my understanding, I'm not quite sure if there's other definitions, but I believe the general definition of fast track is where you're basically, for example, you get your foundation approved, and they start construction immediately on that foundation while you're still designing and working out the bugs of the rest of the building. And then you get that another phase of it permitted, and then you feed that out to the field and they start building. So you're kind of doing both at the same time, okay, rather than working out the entire design and then getting that permit pulled, okay, and then going to construction. And they, some of the numbers that come out is cutting the construction time from 3 years to 18 months.
No way. And you're still talking about hospitals?
Yes. So I know for a fact that the fast track method,
this goes right along with what we're talking about with offsite construction, though. I know it's not offsite construction, but it's just a different method of doing it. And we talked about time savings and everything else. So if this is really honestly something they're doing, then we should pull a hard parallel to how you need to do this on the residential side, because
it's not,
there's no way you're cutting a cycle time in half.
I don't That's think nuts. You can do it in residential, because it's already so fast of a project.
Fair point.
And things change so rapidly. I think you'll run into more problems if you try and compare it to residential. At least on a small scale.
Like, even if we could still 20%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But there's no way it's half. Like, I think that would be awesome. I really do. But I don't see half.
So for our listeners that have done the fast track method, please contact us. Let us know what kind of numbers.
Yeah, no joke. I would love to. I mean, in all sincerity, I would love to hear about that.
Yeah.
If it legitimately, if you can cut it by 25%, I mean, that to me would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't Horton the one that has the product that's like the express product?
I'm not sure.
And supposedly, the build time's like 45 days.
Huh.
It's not.
Yeah.
Like
that's,
when it,
that's every, like half.
I know. From everybody that's told me, they're like, it's not really 45 days. You know, so I don't know what the actual answer is.
I wonder, do you know what they mean by express? Like, what is that?
Yeah. So it's like, there's like almost no options. It's you're stamping it out. It's a stamped out house.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It's something that they've done over and over again.
They stripped out a lot of the uniqueness in some of those plans. From what I understand, I'm not working with them, so I'm not dealing with that. But it's made it very cookie cutter ish.
Yeah,
to where they can just pound them out, and it's not. There's not a lot of that here. There's a little bit, but it's primarily pushing out towards the east.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. So another issue, last one I'll jump on, was infection control and indoor air quality. And this is still for construction, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
'Cause you're introducing new people and materials into the environment and bacteria. More people and more traffic in that space. Increased levels of dust and chemicals,
yeah, for sure,
obviously. And then in a renovation, I'd never really thought about it, but they do renovate hospitals
all the time.
Yeah, so there's concern of vibration that not only can release dust and mold spores into the air, but can also throw equipment out of whack that the hospital uses. So that's a huge concern. And then mold and particulates from demo and nearby construction get into.
And that goes to containment and air quality again, right?
Yeah. And then for new construction, air ducts not properly being protected during construction.
So they're all,
So they do have, I can't think of the name of it right now, but when they basically blow out the air system, when they open the building, they basically run the air conditioning to clean out the air.
I don't know if it's the same thing, like when they do a startup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of the process.
Yeah. So,
but they got to do like air scrubbers and all that kind of stuff and make sure there's no contamination in there still.
Yeah. Are you familiar with I know you know LEED.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the WELL AP?
No.
Okay. So the WELL, we're going to do a whole episode about LEED and WELL AP.
Okay.
But just specific to this and the air quality, WELL, while LEED is about building efficiency, correct, WELL is about the wellness of the people that are occupy a space. Hmm. So there's all these markers and things to do to maintain a high quality environment for people. And one of these things is air quality. So like I was talking about that air clean out,
mm-hmm,
they have you run the air conditioning system for a certain amount of time to move a certain amount of air to ensure that it's completely clear.
And, well, it's getting filtered.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And then I believe you change the filter after you run it.
I would imagine.
Yeah. So, and the CDC actually estimates that approximately 5,000 people die every year from hospital-acquired infections linked to construction and renovation activities.
Oh, 5,000 linked to construction and renovation.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, if it's only 5,000 people, I was like, that number doesn't sound right.
Yeah, linked to construction.
Got it.
And renovation. But the, one of a project that I found interesting in regards to renovation, it's called the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. It's a long one. And this is in Boston. So they redesigned an area of this hospital, introducing all those warm colors and wood tones. Yep. And they basically reduced the footprint of the nursing stations. And they were able to up the bed count. I'll place this article on our website as well, because I can't find it right now. But I think they upped the bed count from, I want to say, 14 to 20 people.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah. So they were able to get more people in. And I think they were all individual private spaces. And instead of having like a wash area for the nursing team, they moved it inside of the patient's room, so it added this comfort level to the patient.
Okay.
So they can see you clean. So everybody that goes to the doctor now, I think the majority of them, you'll see they have that sink in the patient room.
I remember
now
that.
So a lot of things like that they're shifting not only the design for efficiency, but for that comfort level and that the treatment of the patient.
It protects them too, by the way.
Yeah.
From a risk management standpoint, mm-hmm. that protects them too, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. And so that goes along with some of the trends that we're starting to see. They're doing this evidence-based design where they craft the environment to provide quantifiable improvements. So they actually study data and, you know, try and make it as efficient as possible for the nursing staff, as well as the patient treatment.
Makes sense. Outcome.
Sustainability and wellness, advancing technology for communications in their hospital networks. And then on the construction side, I'm pretty sure everybody's probably using this now, but the BIM modeling, the building information modeling is what BIM stands for. And that's, I described it earlier in our offsite construction episode, but so I won't re-describe it. You can go back and check that out if you want to get that definition. It's pretty cool. And one project that I really wanted to highlight on that kind of new trend side, we'll have photos of the project I just mentioned. Oh, and then
Johns Hopkins.
Cannot get that
to right,
save
you.
My life.
I got you.
Photos of that, as well as this other project, which is called the fifth. I am going to butcher this. This project is in China. It's the fifth Shangya Hospital.
Sounds pretty official.
I think that's
right. Yeah, you nailed it.
And this is by Payet, is the architect for that project. It's known as a medical city for healing. It's really, Jason, you can kind of describe what you're seeing as well, but it's like a really cool design, open structure. The building itself kind of snakes back and forth, and you have these gorgeous courtyards in between.
Like I was saying it earlier, it looks more like a business park as opposed to a hospital. You know what I mean? Where people are going and they're doing their thing, like whether you're going to work, or you're going, you know, for treatment. But then you've got all these open areas, and it's almost like inviting to be there and stay there, and it's positive and fresh, you know?
Yeah, and every space kind of connects to nature.
Nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you'll see that
as it's impressive.
Part of the wellness AP, that's a huge thing about that connection to nature and being able to see nature, getting a lot of natural light in. You'll see that immediately when
you... Yeah, you guys should check it out. I mean, it's a pretty cool looking space.
Yeah, so if you're at a computer, check our website, spacespodcast.com. under the Listen tab. If you scroll down, you'll see individual show notes. We have photos and links to all the articles that we've kind of referenced and from the information that we've covered. Other than that, I think this has been the definitive episode on hospitals. I don't think you need to know anything else about hospitals.
No, you just generally want to stay away. Right? That's the idea. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, it's such big business, though. And that's why it's so important. You know what I mean? There's in so many different ways. But if you're going to have to go, and I have a good friend that was in the hospital for about a week. He was staying at Hoag, which is a beautiful hospital here in Newport Beach. But it's just, if you're going to have to be there, if you could have something like Payette,
yeah,
that we're going to have up on the website, I mean, is beautiful. I mean,
Payette's the architect.
Sorry.
The Fifth Xiang Ya Hospital.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So check out the website and take a look at it. But you can imagine if you were in a room there, you're getting some kind of treatment or you're having to stay. I mean, it looks like a hotel.
Yeah.
You know, it truly does look like a hotel. And with the amount of money that's being pumped into the system these days, I'd imagine they'll start doing more and more of those things because now it's becoming big business.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. But yeah, as long as we can start getting rid of that beige. But there's a lot of studies that were done a long time ago that was like a calming, like that's the calming color.
Yeah.
And so that's why they have that in there. But I almost wonder if that needs to change because we all look at it now as in we don't like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mentally.
Was it Seth Godin?
Was it?
Or, no, not for that. But Seth Godin wrote a book called The Purple Cow.
Oh yeah, no, I read it.
And
it's a hell of a book.
Yeah, it's like, you look at a ton of cows and all of a sudden the cows kind of just disappear. And
yeah,
like if you're on a drive and the cows disappear, you don't even notice yeah. them. All of a sudden there's a purple cow. And you're like whoa, boom. It's a purple cow.
Exactly.
But if they were all purple cows, then it would disappear.
Yeah. I mean, so once you become beige, conditioned, you got to yeah. snap it out of, yeah. you know, snap it back out.
But, and one thing that never gets old is nature. It's constantly changing.
Well, and I think too, look, I believe there's a real connection, you know what I mean? To the universe and everything around you. I'm a God fearing individual, but so I believe in God, but I think you really have to have a connection to the outdoors and the outside and nature, and it's good for you.
Yeah.
So the more often you can do, and this is coming from a guy that won't have live plants in the house. Like I just don't believe in it. I think it's the dumbest thing ever.
Cause but, you kill them or
cause my wife does, she can't. And she, it's the joke. She's like, every time we get something new, cause she does a great job with that type of stuff. But she's like, I don't think I can kill these. And I'm telling you, like within a couple of weeks, those the poor trees, man, or the poor plants or whatever the hell they are. I'm like, just buy the fake ones. Like just get it over with, you know? But you know, I think you have to have that connection. You need to go outside. You need to have that walk. You need to do whatever. And if you're not in a state in which you can do that, the fact that they're bringing it to them now is I think, you know, pretty crucial.
Yeah. So. Okay. So before we go, we want to introduce one last segment. Jason's been itching to break out. We try and restrain him as much as we can, but he's been itching to get out. So we'll give him a few minutes and we're going to introduce a new segment this week.
Warning, grab a pen and paper or cover your ears if you can't handle it. The following is the straight truth with Jason.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
There's something that's been chewing at me even since our millennial talk. And right now, my wife's dealing with a few different things in our studio, or in her studio that I hear about or get yelled at about. And then on top of that, in the companies that I work with, we're going through performance reviews and things of that nature. One of the things that's been coming up a lot, and I would encourage people in our generation, look, I love the idea about growth and attaining wealth and wanting to take additional steps and make yourself better and everything else, but you need to work for it. I mean, we've got some struggles with some individuals right now where they're saying, you know, they're coming in and we're doing a performance review. And whatever their title is, they're saying, look, I've done some research and my title pays X. Or, you know, not that blunt, but yeah. saying, you know, my title pays X, so I think I need a raise. That is not how you get a raise. Like, that is not how this works. And if you are really interested in, you know, what that other person does in that other company, go to that other company. Like, that's not what your barometer should be. Don't focus on the stuff that's on the outside. You need to stop and take a look at it and say, geez, what am I doing or not doing that is not putting the company in a position where they want to come to me and they see value in what I'm doing or value beyond what it is I'm already doing and already getting a paycheck for to make themselves better and attain that next step, you know? And the funny thing is this, they, and I kind of heard it almost pretty straight this way. They're like, well, you know, what other opportunities? It doesn't work that way. You start learning and you take the opportunities. You need to do the work and you need to better yourself before the money comes and before those opportunities come. It should never be in a situation for two reasons. It should never be in a situation where you're going and you're trying to beg or demand additional money. One, if you were as good as you thought you were, the company would already do that. And two, if the company's not doing that and you really are truly honest and looking at yourself in the mirror that you're making a difference and you've done all these different types of things to where you should be in a position for that, then you need to go to a different company.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the people that are asking these things aren't even close to that. And I can tell you the people that we went and did this with, like in the last several months, we approached them and said, hey, you're doing a killer job. Like, we want to continue to encourage this. So-and-so or their supervisor, or however you want to look at it. I don't do a hierarchical thing, but they're looking at it and saying, you know what? XYZ individual is just killing it. They've grown leaps and bounds, and we need to take a look at that. You know what I mean? We've got a situation where for some young kids that are 15 and 16 years old, we've got parents that are dealing with my wife or with myself on different sides. And the child is going back to the parent, who's roughly our generation, and saying, you know, this is going on, this is going on, this is going on. And the parent takes their kid's words at 100% truth and fires off. Stop. Stop. Like, I don't understand. I don't have a problem with you wanting to defend your child, but this is a situation for anything. You can't just take one little tidbit and think that that's gospel and not be involved and then go raise hell with somebody. Like, you can't do that. Like, you need to get involved. Like, I'm going to say it from a parental side. You need to get involved. Every time my son tells me, or my daughter would tell me, like, so-and-so is being mean to him, I'm going to go check it out. Like, okay, let's find out why. What's going on? Not just, you know, this person being mean to me, I pick up the phone and I start berating somebody.
Yeah.
What the hell is that? Like, what's wrong with people?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I don't understand. And, you know, I think we're confusing our generation and money and those types of things. Like, here's another thing that's bothering me. People, if you can't afford to buy stuff, don't buy it. Don't take big loans. You know what I mean? Don't keep drawing out money to get the next bigger, better thing. If you can't afford it in cash, minus a house and car and those types of things, right? Because those are, you know, not bad debt necessarily. Don't go buy a car well beyond your means. It's not what I'm saying. But I understand having a loan on a car, having a loan on a house. But if you can't afford some of these other things that you want to do, trips, you know, material purchases, renovations, whatever, without paying for it in cash, don't do it. Yeah. Stop. I mean, I know the economy is good right now and everybody feels like it's going to keep going, but don't do it, because that's what happens every time. People overextend themselves, especially the younger groups, right? They overextend themselves. The market goes down. Not that it has to crash, but jobs start getting eliminated. And all of a sudden, you have to pay back all these people and you've got no money. And now you're bankrupt. Anyway, that's my thing for today. I appreciate you guys letting me get that off my chest. If anybody wants to challenge me on that, CrossFitters, go for it. I have no problem with that. So
feel free to.
I can't drop my mic because it's stuck to the table.
Yeah. So feel free to email us however you feel about that. So we'll finish with these last couple items. Listener mail.
It's awesome.
So for this week, I'm going to do a quick kind of round the world of our social media, responses. I deleted this one just because it was a bad one. We got
That's
our
awesome.
First, we got our first negative one, but I deleted it just cause, I don't want that content on our Instagram. Oh, by the way, this guy has not listened to our show at all. So he says, you should be careful putting your information everywhere. You guys look like a bunch of a-holes anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look like a bunch of a-holes?
Yeah.
Really? So, I can tell you, Demetrius and Allie are not. I understand the concern that it might be me, because I've been labeled that before, and I'm totally fine with that. So I don't know who the hell that was, and I really don't want to know, but that sounds like a massive judgment to me.
Yeah, isn't
so,
it crazy?
Look before you leap, babe.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then we'll go on the positive side.
I love it. I don't care if it's negative or positive. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So on the positive side, a couple short ones.
Like truly said a-hole, like said it with the A double dollar signs or what?
Yeah.
Full on said the whole piece. That's awesome.
Yeah. He really went for it. So on the positive side, we have one that says...
like as a CrossFitter.
We have one that says, listen to the first two episodes, really enjoyed it. Surprisingly interesting, especially for someone with no knowledge of the industry. Look forward to listening. And that is from Andrew.
Do you have the name and address of the other guy?
I don't.
It wasn't a girl, I guarantee you that.
No, it was a guy, yeah. But I deleted that one already.
We should post that.
And the other one's really short too. It says, your page/podcasts are so useful to me as an architect student. Smiley face. And this is Sullivan Poppy. It's on Instagram.
Awesome.
So yes, thank you for the comments. We really appreciate all of those. And then I had to mention that we are starting to get responses to the contest.
Yeah.
So I saw a photo of a guy with headphones, and he tagged us, and it has a little arrow pointing to his headphones.
That's awesome.
So we don't have a ton of people that have posted pictures just yet. So if you want to go ahead and jump in on this contest, you have a good chance to win. Go to our website to get additional details, spacespodcast.com.
Dude, I have one more thing we didn't address at all.
What?
The Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy because that's all I'm watching at night right now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm having to watch a lot of ice dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Because my wife thinks it's amazing. But here's the deal. So first off, go USA. Women's hockey, first time in 5 years, they beat the Canadians for gold.
Yeah.
And it was an absolutely off the hook, amazing game.
That was exciting.
I mean, it was amazing. And then Sean White coming back and doing his thing, right? Yeah. The Flying Tomato, making it happen. And then I am absolutely enthralled with curling right now.
I don't know.
I'm going to get into a curling league. Addicting. It's like I was mesmerized by it.
It's like watching a lava lamp.
It really That's a good parallel.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I was mesmerized by it, and I can't get enough of it right now.
I was at a
bar. No idea. Like, I don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
But they have one in Westminster.
Oh, really?
They do it.
That's so
cool. I'm like, I'm totally going to do it.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Anyways, go USA. Way to go, women's hockey. Absolutely amazing game. Unbelievable. Congrats.
So again, if you want to, please do send us messages on our social media or email. I want to continue to play with the sound effects. So as long as we get listener mail, you'll hear more random sounds. Hello@spacespodcast.com is our email. Connect with us on Facebook, facebook.com/spacespodcast. On Twitter @spacespodcast. On Instagram, instagram.com/spacespodcast. We are on Snapchat, but apparently Snapchat is tanking because of Kylie Jenner.
I have no idea.
What's her name?
Like the Kardashians?
Yeah, the Kardashians' little sister.
Oh, I don't even want to know.
Anyway, I don't know if we're going to stick with Snapchat, but...
have a Snapchat account.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But and then linkedin.com/company/spaces-podcast. And again, we know that there are tons of podcast options out there, and we really appreciate you guys spending some time with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and like it on whichever platform you're listening to this. And go ahead and click that share button. Share it with a friend. Your support is the only way that this grows. And if you just stumbled upon the show, please subscribe so you don't miss another episode.
I mean, even if you think we're a-holes, by all means, continue to listen, share it to the rest of your a-hole friends, whatever it is. We have no problem with that.
So don't forget to check out spacespodcast.com under the Listen tab. There's tons of photos and show notes on stuff we talked about today. And with all that said, if you're catching up, hit next, or if you're listening as we put these out, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Thank you. Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually in putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically, you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.